Rabbi, before we went to the music break, I said to you I wanted to talk about the actual taking the program into schools. We've gone from a kernel of an idea into a foundation with a board and a curriculum. I wonder if you could briefly outline for us what this curriculum is.
Yeah, we're looking at the teachers being the primary people that are responsible for shaping students' attitudes, and we're there to support them, so to add a catalyst. The themes we cover in our presentations are identity. One of the really odd things about Australia's conception of themselves is that we found with 50,000 students we've worked with, most of them don't think of Australian outside of that white idea of an Australian. So even the children themselves, just last week we had an audience where most of the children were actually of Asian background, and they still chose the person that they thought looked typically Australian, white and whatever, as Australian, and anyone who didn't fit that mold, even if they didn't look particularly unusual, they had an Australian accent and everything else, they're not Australian. So one of the things we do is actually raise awareness and look at how sensible that actually is. Does that actually make any sense? And help children laugh about how ridiculous it is, and bring those prejudices to the fore and recognize that prejudice is a very common thing. It's not something out there for, big hairy monsters. The prejudice is very common. We look at commonality of values, and also about respecting difference and recognizing where the differences and the similarities are, and looking at what could we do to give expression to that commonality of values and purpose.
Sheikh, I wonder, can you tell me, you go into primary schools and you go into high schools?
Yes, we go into both primary and high schools, and depending on who the audience is, the program's tweaked accordingly so that they can relate to the content and also the way in which it's presented.
So you were saying that you rely on the teachers, but do you come in as a group, as a Together for Humanity group, say into High School A in Darwin, and work with the teachers, or how does actually physically it work itself out?
Well, generally, most of the time, the schools are doing something around that, whether it's NAIDOC or whether some sort of diversity training or getting used to other cultures or studying at other faiths in their curriculum or at school. And we also do a pre-presentation, like a survey, or there's a questionnaire also to prepare the students for what's going to happen and so they get the most benefit out of the presentation. Then after that, we come along and we present to Together for Humanity facilitators, and we present to the school, we present to the students, they ask questions, etc. We run the program. Then afterward, also there's a follow-up, surveys, customer relations type thing where they say what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it, what benefit they got out of it, and they rate the performance, they rate the content, they rate the delivery, these types of things. So we're constantly improving what we do.
We do based on how they go. Rabbi, tell me this, when you get these questionnaires back, I'm presuming that's outcomes. Mm. Is that something for you to clap your hands about when you look at the results?
Absolutely. We spoke to a very prominent citizen in this area here. I don't know if you'd want me to quote him. Who the Sheikh and I went to see him about financial support for the program in sometime in 2008, and he looked at the Sheikh and I, and he said, "If something happened in the Middle East, would this erase everything you've done?" And Sheikh Haysom looked him straight in the eye and said, "We don't know," because at that time we didn't know. Subsequent to that, we had attitude surveys from students that were attached to the Arab-Israeli conflict, through family and or at least through community. And the attitudes, the prejudices that they showed before they met the students of the other group, surveys taken in June 2009, when, of course, in between that there was a massive conflict in Gaza, and it was the whole the relationships between the two communities were at breaking point, really. And still we saw dramatic improvements in attitudes, even though you had that trauma in between. You had 30-40% of responses being much more positive on various indicators in terms of the other people being seen as friendly, respect women, good morals, like me, all these kind of indicators where students were 30% of the responses were more positive, 30-40% depending on which particular indicators were more positive afterwards than in comparison with before.
Well, wow, that's pretty encouraging. Sheikh, I wonder if you can give us, for instance, what is one of the exercises or one of the issues that you use to teach the children?
I think one of the most popular programs or facets of the program is that we call it the box game. Excuse me. So in the box game, we have our presenters stand up in front of the students, and they don't know who we are. They don't know what our names are or what we're about. And then we ask them to choose from the presenters who they think is Australian. And as Rabbi Zelman was saying earlier, that normally they pick the white Anglo-Saxon blonde head, depending on the situation, presenter, and they say that person's Australian. So the people who aren't selected to be Australian, which is generally me, I'm the one that spends a lot of time in the box. Sometimes it's Rabbi Zelman, sometimes it's others. And so that individual will go into the box, and then we'll break down that exercise. Why did you choose this person? Why did you think this person wasn't Australian? Why did you think this person was Australian? What does it mean to be Australian? And then after that, as Rabbi Zelman was saying before, we'll look at how reasonable is it to think that an Australian is this particular type of person? Can an Australian be a person of this appearance or any religion or any skin colour or any name? So the students kind of get the picture because it's very, very clear. And the box represents people who are outside the box. And I think that it's a great icebreaker. It's a great way for the children or the students to interact as well. And it makes things very, very clear and apparent. And it gives them a clear understanding of what their perceptions are and their assumptions are about other people, the people they're not familiar with.
Sure. I can see how you can change attitudes. Rabbi, tell me this. I know that you go all over Australia. I've seen on the website references to Western Australia, to Darwin, to Queensland, as well as here in Sydney. Are there differences in the issues that you confront when you travel to different parts of Australia?
I think the Indigenous issues are much more significant in the territory. I mean, we've certainly seen that. We've worked with some students, some schools where most of the students were Indigenous. When having some discussions about what this is really about at its core essence, one of the things that we found is that Aboriginal leaders who've been involved, or African, one of our presenters is an African Muslim. The word belonging was the word that the minority perspective sort of saw as central to all of this. So I think when you're dealing with, I guess, what you might loosely call more privileged groups, the question is more on prejudice and cooperation and respect. Whereas when you're dealing with a group that feel marginalized or alienated or excluded in some way, then the focus changes to how do we help this audience feel like they have got every right and privilege and opportunity to contribute and be part of the Australian community.
Right. I can understand that you were saying this is with Indigenous children. You find these issues of belonging come more to the forefront. What about when you go into schools, Sheikh, where there are some Muslim students but they are a minority? Do you find that those issues become somewhat the same for those children?
I think it depends on the socioeconomic area that we're dealing with. So if it's an area where there's a high concentration of Muslim students, I don't think they feel it as much because they've got the familiarity of other students who are similar to them, who maybe go through the same sort of things that they go through. Sometimes when we go to schools where there's only one or two Muslim students, sometimes even the students will come up to me afterwards and say, oh, it's good, you know, to see a Muslim doing these things. And so it just depends on the circumstance. But I think there is, generally speaking, I think there is that vein that travels through, you know, the Muslim students that we speak with. And at the same time, they're young people most of the time, so their experience with the outside world is already limited because of their age.
Yeah.
So it's got to be balanced. But I think there is a general strain, yes.
I think it's time for us to go and hear a little bit more music. If you have just joined us, my very special guests in the studio are Rabbi Zalman Castell and Sheikh Hassan Farash. We're talking about a truly splendid program that they're working on called Together for Humanity. This is Arts Wednesday. I'm Sylvia Rosenblum.